Welcome to another edition of Sports Look here on a Thursday evening on CARE Radio. Great to have you along with us. Gus Counts with me, Tom Counts, and we always thank our wonderful Sports Look sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, and Exchange Bank. And wow, Gus, it is getting hectic now. We're going into week two of the high school football season, and tomorrow night we're going to get a chance to check out the NEKL a little bit as we will be in Winchester. It will be ACCHS at Jefferson County North on tomorrow night. We'll have that one for you, CARE Radio, about a 7 o'clock kickoff. And then Saturday afternoon, the Benedictine Ravens return home, and they will be hosting Peru State up at Wilcox Stadium. 1 o'clock kickoff here in Atchison. The CARE Radio pregame is going to begin about 12:30 as we talk to the coach and get you a lot of pregame information. So that said, we're going to dive right into last week. There were a lot of games that went on, and you and I got to see really an exciting one up at Amelia Earhart Stadium as Atchison was able to prevail in their first game of the season against a new opponent, at least relatively new. They haven't played in a long time, Ottawa. Atchison winning at 31-24 and a good win to start the year.
Yeah, you talk about two teams that went into that game, both well coached, trying to get one up for the first game, and for Atchison, 31 points. They were able to overcome a little adversity at times. And again, it's one of those wins that A, it's great to be 1-0. B, it's good to go into that first game, find out some of the things you need. And I felt like as the game progressed, Atchison got better, right? Like they started to figure out as the game went on what they do well. And again, this is going to be a really good Atchison ball club this season.
I think there's no question about it because we're going to look at the other scores from around the Meadowlark League that from past Friday. And you look at some, and we'll just dive in. Schlegel's pretty good. They win 55-0 over Harmon. Harmon has had some struggles, and looks like this season is going to be another one of those for them. You've got Sumner with a shutout win over Washington, 21-0. And then maybe the big news in the conference, Highland Park. The newest member of the group comes in. Man, they've been on the skids. They've been fighting, but Coach Monroe's kind of got them maybe turning around, and they break a long losing streak, knocking off Wyandotte. And defense was not really an issue in this game because there wasn't one. Yeah. It was a 60-47 game.
Okay. It also maybe tells us a little bit about the Meadowlark. Okay? We're 1 week in, and I can already kind of look at something. You can draw that line of demarcation.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, like, the teams that went 0-1 are the teams that are going to maybe struggle a little bit in this conference. And that's not saying that every conference is like that, but you can tell because Harmon has, you know, perennially struggled a little bit. Washington has been down a little bit. Wyandotte has been a team who it's been a while since they've had a good season. But Atchison's good. Schlegel is pretty good. And, you know, Sumner has been better over the last handful of years. And Highland Park, you know, they're kind of that wild card right now, if you will.
Yeah, and as Highland Park entered the conference, you automatically say, well, you know, they've been winless for kind of a while, and they're probably not real good. But yet, they were playing a very different schedule and a very different size and kind of opponent, you know, with the big schools. So maybe in this conference, who knows, they might become a very competitive group.
Yeah, and you never know. I mean, when a team wins that first game, all of a sudden that monkey's off the back, and you never know where their minds might go. Like, oh, maybe we can do this. And then, you know, the effort changes, the output changes, wins start to happen. So, again, something to keep an eye on. In the Northeast Kansas League, for the most part, it was a good time to travel.
Oh, my goodness. And it's a good time to be on offense because there were a lot of points scored last Friday in the NEKL.
Yeah, ACCHS knocked off Valley Falls 44-6. Moore Hill Mount Academy scored 54 on their way to a 54-14 win over Oskaloosa. JCN scores 50 as they went to Pleasant Ridge and won 50-8. Onega, back in 11-man football, they knocked off McLouth on the road 21-0. And the only home team in the conference to win, Jackson Heights, put up the most points in the conference. They defeated Horton 61-7.
And the interesting thing is that when you compare sizes of the school, I think that even though Onega has just gone back to 11-man football, I think Jackson Heights has a lower enrollment yet. So Jackson Heights may be the smallest team in this conference. But as we came into the year, And not just us, but, you know, the statewide pundits have looked at these teams and they said, you know what, ACCHS is going to be pretty doggone good. JCN is going to be pretty good. And these are two teams that you need to watch, and they are both ranked right now. We're going to have a great game Friday.
Yeah, the Tigers are going to make their way out to Winchester and take on JCN. And I don't know, we'll have to ask around. I feel like it's been a while since the Tigers and Chargers have matched up, really because of the whole district play. Even though they're in the same conference, they don't play a whole lot because, you know, JCN at the time was in a bigger district, and so they started 1 week earlier, you know. But when it all comes down to it, it should be a fantastic game out in Winchester Friday night.
Okay, you're expecting, since they both scored a lot, are you expecting a lot of points? Oh, or since they both gave up very few, are you expecting not many points?
Yeah, I was going to go the other way. I was going to expect that, you know, this could be one of those, you know, 20 to 18 type games. I think if somebody gets to 30, they win. Okay, I really don't think a team gets to 30.
I'm writing that down. 30 points win.
Yeah, I mean, because I really think that the winner will be somewhere in the mid-20s by the time they get out of this thing.
Also, a little tip of the helmet, since it's offensive football, to Coach Fredrickson and the Ravens is in his first game as head coach at MHMA. They come away with a very impressive win, and even better because it's on the road. You know, that's hard to do.
Yeah, going to Oskaloosa, coming away with a nice win, putting up 54 points. All those things bode well for MHMA. Now they're going to turn their attention to opening the Guy Galley Field portion of the season, as they're going to be at home against a really good opponent, Jackson Heights. I mean, you look at this, there are two really good games in the Northeast Kansas League on Friday night.
No question about it. And so if you're staying in town, we would encourage you to pop down there and watch that ball game. Although in Atchison, there's also going to be a home game back at Amelia's. Atchison plays a lot of home games early in the schedule, and they're going to have that Sumner team. We talked about them, probably pretty good. Atchison's going to be at home with Sumner Friday night.
Yep. Highland Park at Schlegel, Washington at Harmon, Wyandotte at Ruskin. Other games in the NEK, McLouth at Horton, Oskaloosa at Pleasant Ridge, and Troy goes to Valley Falls.
We'll shift our sights a little bit from a high school game to college football and the Benedictine Ravens and Gus. Last Saturday, we saw about as entertaining a college football game as you're going to possibly see, although in the last 2 seconds, it became a heartbreaking game for Raven fans.
Oh, yeah. You're still a little sick, right?
I mean, not over it yet.
I think that Saturday is going to go a long ways to help get over that, because it's one of those things where it's just on your mind about how, you know, I'm sure when you talk to Coach Osborne, he's still what-ifing, you know, like, could have done this, should have maybe done that. But when it's all said and done, you went toe-to-toe with a really good team at their place. And, I mean, it took a school record 52-yard field goal as time expired.
With a strong wind at
his back. You know, I mean, honestly, with no wind, I don't think he probably gets that one through. But at the end of the day, BC played well enough to come back, right? Found themselves in a 28-6 hole early on, but kept fighting back, didn't give up, took the lead late, lost on the last-second field goal. And the other thing is, they can't dwell on that game, and that's probably going to be one of our Dairy Queen Grill and Chill keys to the game, is, you know, can't dwell on that Grandview what-if type game. You got to move your sights because, again, back against the wall a little bit, because you can't lose two games early on in the season, especially when you're fighting to get into the top 25. It's different when you're, you know, 6, 8, 10. But when you're on the outside, you got to get into the top 25 and move up high enough. So right now the Ravens need to get on the right ship and, you know, get a Peru State team who, last year when we went to the Oak Bowl, let's be honest, Peru State ran away with that thing.
Yeah, Peru State gave Benedictine their worst loss of the year, frankly. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily because of the score and the differential, but because of the loss and where it was at and against whom it had come. Yeah. So,
and that was one of those games last year. I can remember going up to the Oak Bowl on that Saturday afternoon. We're going, because it was a night game, and we're like, all right, this game's kind of in the bag. You know, it'll be fun. This will be a good get-right game. And it wasn't. So for BC, I'm sure that, you know, everybody's on the same page about, remember last year, try to get this one, keep pushing the wins together and moving on.
For Benedictine football, there are some things that, even though we are only two games into the season, I feel like are beginning to emerge, and we're beginning to say a lot and the same things, in that Todd and Gathright are fantastic, and right now they are carrying the offense on their shoulders.
Yeah, it's been a minute since you've had two receivers that you were like, wow. You know, I mean, and I say a minute, I mean, you probably go back to 18 when you had Aaron Jackson and Trey Adger, right? You know, maybe Aaron Jackson and Alex Blake, something like that, depending on, you know, what your style was or what you liked. But, like, these two guys are completely different than Aaron Jackson and anybody you wanted to put with him. Like, these aren't go up, high point the ball, and take it away from every defender possible. These are guys that, you know, if they're even, they're leaving. These are two of the fastest guys in the conference, and I'm telling you, they get by you. There's no catching them, and for Kettle, it's got to be kind of fun to just set back, throw the ball as hard as you can, because you can't outthrow these two guys.
No, and for Benedictine, of course, it seems like our focus is on the receivers and on the long kick returns. 102-yard kick return for the Ravens Saturday. Fantastic, and again, just an illustration of the speed that they have on that field, but Ravens are still searching and searching for a running game.
Yeah, you know, Benedictine had two running backs that had, you know, plus side of carries, ended the day with negative side of yards, you know, and so that's something you just can't have. You can't have two guys that, you know, take 5, 7, 9 carries and end up with negative yards between both of them. So, again, they're going to have to find somebody that they can kind of lean on in that running game. And honestly, maybe put a little more faith in the running game, right? Like, we're not seeing a whole lot of runs right now, and some of that too is because Gathright and Jay Sean are playing so well on the outside. You're like, maybe we can throw it to them a little more and kind of cover up our run game. But at the end of the day, they're gonna have to find a back that they're able to lean on. And again, I know we're talking about 5 years later. It's tough to find a Marquise, okay? Understand that's not the guy you're going to be able to find right now. You know, can you go out and find that guy? Probably at some point, but that's not what you have on the roster. So you're going to have to find out how you can make what's on the roster right now work best for you this season.
And Benedictine has had a history in the past couple of 3 years, maybe almost their leading rusher has been Garrett Kettle, the quarterback, because he's been carrying the ball. And me, and this is maybe just a personal football philosophy, my quarterback is my leading rusher. I'm really uncomfortable with that because A, I want a running back, okay? B, I hate seeing my quarterback take 30 hard hits a day.
You know the other thing that I don't like about my quarterback being my leading rusher? Now all of a sudden, he's going to be exhausted by the end of the game. So let's say we come down to the last 2 minutes. He's got 20 rushes on the day. His legs are away from him. Now you're saying, hey, by the way, I need you to get rested up real quick and go down and win this game. And, you know, sometimes that's when you just don't have it underneath you to drive that ball on an out, and it gets picked and the game gets sealed, you know. So, again, for me, it's more of the endurance factor of, you know, having a quarterback run that many times, you know, even if he doesn't get hit. So,
okay, let's do something really crazy out of the box. You put Laskowski in at quarterback and leave Kettle in as a running back.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. You know, Kettle's a good enough runner.
He's a big,
like,
strong guy.
Like, honestly, he could be a running back.
He would punish
school.
Some defenders,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so.
Anyway, that's all crazy stuff, but we're looking forward to being up at Wilcox Stadium Saturday.
Cora's a fan right now. Cora's a fan of Pegasus.
Oh.
So, you know, I mean, I think that's kind of along the same lines of, you're not going to see it, okay?
You're not going to see it, but you really want to.
You really want to.
It brings up a whole lot of interesting, cool things to think about, doesn't it?
How about games that went on around the conference on Saturday? I don't get this one. Missouri Valley, okay? They beat Peru State 2 weeks ago, 16-6 in Marshall. Then they go on the road to Clark and lose 31-30.
Uh-huh.
I just don't know. I can't figure out Missouri Valley, and honestly, haven't been able to figure out Missouri Valley for like 5 years.
We're going to know more about that game when we see Peru State. Is Peru State so terrible that really even a bad Valley team can beat them? Or was that just a home game aberration on an opening game?
Peru State was at home in the Oak Bowl last Saturday, and they knocked off Central Methodist 24-0. Central Methodist is just kind of going to be there, I think, this season. You know, I don't expect them to be. They've gone through too much already this year that, you know, I don't know that I can expect them to be the team they were last year.
They'll show up for every game, but is their heart and mind really in
I mean,
it? It'd be hard. It would really be hard, and I understand that.
Baker went up to Oskaloosa, Iowa, and did what I think a lot of teams are going to do against William Penn this year is get right. You know, Baker 34-14 over William Penn. Graceland wins for the first time in a long time. They knocked off Evangel 46-35 and Culver Stockton at home over Mid-America 44-29. So that sets up your games for this week, and a lot of eyes will be looking at Baldwin City and Liston Stadium for a 1 o'clock kickoff as Grandview at Baker. You'll have Peru at Benedictine, Clark at Central Methodist are all 1 o'clock kickoffs. The night games, you'll see 3 6 o'clock kickoffs. Culver will go to Evangel, really go to Nixa. Graceland will be at Missouri Valley, so you know Coach Ross could get another victory over Coach Troth. And William Penn will be at Mid-America for the night game.
One last thing before we wrap up segment one. We got a couple of great interviews coming up here as Sports Look continues on K-Radio. But as I look at this, and we kind of had this notion coming into the season, and I know it's only 2 weeks in, but is it fair to say that when you look at this, there are 4 good teams in the conference? A couple of teams in the north, a couple of teams in the south, and then kind of the rest?
Yeah, probably. Right?
I mean, yeah, are you seeing Culver and Grandview on one side, Benedictine and Baker on the other, maybe?
Yeah, but I just don't even know what to make of Culver Stockton, right? I just think they're going to have another okay year, right? They lost to Baker in week one, 26-14. I mean, I think that they kind of are what they are. It's an okay team, but not a team that really worries you at the end of the day. So, again, it's a three-horse race, right? It's Grandview, it's Baker, it's Benedictine. I mean, tell me it's been anything different for, like, the last 20 years. And we talked about it earlier that Baker is following Benedictine in the schedule this year, right? So next week, Baker will have Peru State. The team Benedictine follows this year is Central Methodist. So they'll get everybody that has played Central Methodist all season. So, you know, it's one of those things we're going to talk about a little closer.
So Baker gets
later.
The teams that BC has beaten up the week before, and yeah. Benedictine gets the teams that cruised over.
Exactly. Okay. So,
hey, Sports Look underway here on Kent Radio. We'll be back. Lots more coming your way right after this. We're visiting with Joe Worthington. He's a principal at Jefferson County North High School and also handles a lot of the AD duties. Joe, it's good to talk to you, my friend. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well, Tom. It's good to talk to you, and it's always good to see you.
Speaking of that, we are excited, Gus and I, to be coming down there Friday night as JCN football is going to be hosting a conference opponent. And, you know, these are a couple of teams that people have been talking about before the season. Going to be really good. It should be a fabulous game for the fans.
We are excited. This is going to be a good test for the kids. ACCHS has a quality team, and we feel like we've got one too, so that would be a great contest. I know the kids are looking forward to it, and the coaches are too. So this very well may be a game that decides who's league champion.
7 o'clock ball game. Any special events or anything going on tomorrow night?
Oh, we usually have a tailgate going on, so there'll be a tailgate. So if people want to come and grab something to eat, a dinner, they can do that. And we don't have any parents' night or anything else going on yet.
This time of the year, we find ourselves maybe sometimes getting wrapped up in all the football stuff because we love that and broadcast those games. But, you know, as an AD and with a lot of students at school, you have a lot of other activities. It's not all just football. So let's talk about some of the fall activities going on at Jeff North.
Well, obviously we have some of the other sports. We feel like we've got a super strong volleyball program right now, a team that we expect to do great things this year. And we have a strong cross-country team this year, both boys and girls. They also have returned after a very good season last year, and both of them just missing out on state. So we're excited about our kids, the ones that are involved. We feel like we have a high number that are high achieving, and so there's a lot of good things going on. There's also a lot of other activities that we have kids involved with, such as, you know, a lot of our other programs won't be long before we start up with Scholars Bowl, and we have a lot of other groups, FBLA and so forth, that are already doing things. So we have a lot of kids involved, and that's like we like to keep them involved because they take ownership of the school, and it just makes our school year go better.
As a smaller school, I mean, one of the really cool things is I would suspect that if you went through enrollment, went through the kids who are participating, you've got a high number, a high percentage of students who do these extracurricular things.
Yeah, in the past, we've tallied some of these numbers to look up who's involved, and often I would say 85% of our students are involved with some sort of extracurricular, which is a great number. We'd always like to be at 100%, but we understand there's reasons. But I would say on average we're at 85, sometimes close to 90% of our students are involved in some extracurricular of some type.
You talked about the volleyball team. Expectations for you guys in your volleyball always so high because year in, year out, and last year, a perfect example, just quality program that you've got. You might talk about the coach and how the turnout has been for that team.
Yeah, Dave Schuler, head coach, has done just a fantastic job year after year of continually having a team that is competitive, usually among the top in the league. Usually looking at being a state contender. Last year was just a wonderful year. Had a great team. The only thing we really lacked was having enough seniors. We only graduated one senior from that group last year. And they were able to go to state and unfortunately weren't able to make it to the second day. This year we have bigger contingent of seniors. I would say the team looks to be, I would say, stronger in depth, and we fully expect them to do well, depending on how regionals go. But I know their goal is to go back to state and make it past that first day and go on to finals. So far, they've had a fantastic start. We've had four league games so far, and we've done well. So. It should be a good season.
Nice to have a steady, experienced hand like Dave at the wheel of that program.
Yeah, it certainly is. Dave does a great job. I would say this about Dave and also Jeff Schneider, our football coach. They both have great programs. They have high expectations, and they expect to win. But they expect to win also as far as the character of our kids. We just feel like they both do a great job of representing our school and the NEKL League. We expect the best, and our kids usually deliver.
Cross country, who is in charge of coaching those programs? And a lot of schools have trouble getting kids to want to run 2 miles. How's the turnout for that?
Well, I wish it was just 2 miles. It's 3.5 miles, and we usually have pretty good turnout. This year, we're actually a little lower than we have been in the past. We have 15 kids out, but those numbers are still pretty good. And Rich Lakey is our head coach. He's been head coach for quite some time. Does a good job of creating enthusiasm for the program. Last year, we just missed out on going to state for boys and girls. They take the top three when you go to regionals, and we ended up fourth in both places. But we're returning a lot of kids. We expect, again, to be looking at the possibility of going to state with either boys or girls. And we have some pretty good individuals, too, in that should do well.
And it's just fun. It's fun to get everybody back together. And the one thing I really want to talk about, we travel a lot. We see a lot of schools. We see a lot of fan bases. And most of them are fantastic. I don't know that any of them are any better than what you have at JCN as far as people who turn out, show up, support the teams and the programs.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a wonderful thing to see the support that our community has for our kids. I feel like we have some of the best fans in the state. They also represent our community wonderfully. And so it's wonderful to have them supporting our kids, going out and being part of those away games, as well as at home. It's a team effort. it makes our teams better. It makes our students stronger. And it's a partnership that we've had at JCN. We feel blessed to have the community we have supporting us.
Joe Worthington, principal at Jefferson County North High School. We appreciate you taking some time out. We look forward to seeing you and the staff and the teams Friday night, man. Thank you very much.
Hey, you bet. And I really look forward to seeing this Friday. And that's just another hat I get to wear now as I guess to be interviewed. So that's excellent.
Don't think it's going to be the last time. It's not.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
We're visiting with Caleb Cook. He's the defensive coordinator's linebackers coach. Coach, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. First of all, we got to start off right at the beginning. People see your name in the program or read it, you know, on the website. They automatically probably think that you're related to people in Wichita and own a huge industrial complex.
That would be false information. Unfortunately, that would be false information.
Because, in fact, people around the area probably know you, know about you, and are familiar with you and your family from your association with high school football and
sure.
Playing at Sabetha.
Sure. Sure. And it's actually pronounced different than Wichita is pronounced Coke and we're pronounced Cook, so.
Exactly. So, anyway, let's get the little bio. You're, what, Sabetha born and raised?
Yep, born and raised. Born in Topeka, but lived my whole life growing up in Sabetha. My family's there. Both my sisters live there. Parents have lived there their whole life. Played for the Sabetha Blue Jays. Played football, basketball, baseball, golf. So did a little bit of everything in a small school. You're able to do that. So it's a really nice place to grow up and. Yeah, just really enjoyed it there, and yeah, it's a great little town for sure in Northeast Kansas.
Who was your head football coach when you were there?
Head football coach was Matt Garber.
Okay.
Before him, it was John Garber, who was there for years and years. Matt was his son. He took over. He took over when I was a freshman, and he was my head coach for 4 years. He's a great man, great coach, and he's the athletic director there now. So head football coach there is Garrett Michael, who was my defensive coordinator in high school. Just great people to learn from and kind of really made me want to be a coach. You know, just the way that they took care of us and the way they pushed us and the way, you know, what I learned from them is kind of why I wanted to become a coach.
After your high school, a successful, very successful high school career at a very quality program, you decided, hey, I'm not done with football. You went on and ultimately played Division II ball down at Topeka.
Yeah. So went to Washburn and, you know, had a good experience there. Found out that, college football is a little different than high school football. A little different than playing, you know, high school football in Northeast Kansas, playing at the Division II level. So I had a great experience, battled some injuries, and, you know, played my role. Wasn't an All-American by any means, but played my role and learned the game and worked hard and, you know, met some of my best friends playing there. Met my wife at school. So, I had a great experience. And again, that's kind of what solidified me to get into college coaching, just with the coaches I worked for, or worked under there that were my position coaches, and coordinators, and the head coach. So I had an awesome experience. Playing at Washburn.
After you graduated, the answer is I'm not done with football yet. And so then you stayed on and did GA work.
Yeah, so my undergrad was in education. So I knew I kind of wanted to get into education and coaching. I wasn't really sure high school, college at the time, and just had an opportunity to become a GA, graduate assistant, and work on my master's. And really that's when, yeah, I was like, okay, this is, you know, the college ball is for me. And, was there for, worked multiple positions, started on the defensive line, coming from playing linebacker safety in college, worked defensive line. And then I worked with a tight end. So I moved over to the offensive side, which was a great experience for me as well to be able to work on that side of the ball, which I hadn't played since high school and had never coached. So I coached the tight ends, fullbacks. And then my last spring before joining Benedictine, I was able to work with the running backs. So, and work with special teams, run a special teams units. So that was awesome. It kind of really jump started my career, and I was able to get some experience coaching, you know, some different positions, which is great.
Okay, so you've coached and played on the defensive side. You've coached. Also, you talk about the fullbacks and the tight ends on the offensive side. Is there a common thread? I mean, if you can coach one position, you've kind of got a hand up on coaching all of them. I mean, is there a lot of similarity in it?
I would say the defensive side of the ball, there's differences, especially like the side of the ball offense. It's like, you know what the play call is, you know what you're going to do. You have to react to what the defense does. But you can kind of just know your job, do your job based on where the defensive lines. Defensively, it's all reactionary. So it's all, you know, we don't know what we're going to see. We don't know what they're going to run before the snap. We just have to react and know what our rules are and, you know, play with good technique. So very different. I really enjoy coaching on the offensive side of the ball when I was a GA. I'm more of a defensive guy. But they're definitely different, which is really interesting. So it's awesome to have experience on both sides, no doubt.
So tell me the story, and I have to feel like there's some kind of a story, how you ended up leaving your alma mater, leaving Washburn, where you played, where you coached, and coming to Atchison. I suspect that Coach Wilcox and conversations with him had a lot to do with that move.
Yeah, so it was just kind of, I think we were in spring practice in 2016. I was coaching the running backs. And I had been applying to get full-time jobs everywhere. And I come back to the office, coach's office after spring practice, and a voicemail from Coach Wilcox. And, you know, he said he's interested in bringing me in on a visit. And the crazy thing is I really had, you know, coming from Sebesta, we played Moore Hill, we played Atchison. I'd been in Atchison a decent amount, but he brought me on a visit for an interview. I didn't know what to expect. I'd never really been on the campus, and I got on the campus and I was blown away. And really Coach Wilcox, he saved my resume from like 6 months prior. He had it and he, you know, had me in the back of his mind. I don't know why he came to the decision to want to, you know, there's an opening, came to the decision to want to bring me in on an interview. And just from there, you know, he interviewed me and showed me around, and I was sold. And then I think he offered me the job the next day. And I said yes, you know, immediately once he called me and offered me the job. And, you know, now it's been, you know, 6+ years, and it's just been awesome.
First positions that you coached when you came to Benedictine?
So I was the outside linebackers coach for 3 years, and then I became the inside linebackers coach and special teams coordinator for 2 years, and then now still coaching the inside linebackers, and with Charlie stepping away, taking over the defense last year and this year. So really been on the defense side coaching linebackers, but went from outside linebackers to inside linebackers after my third year on campus.
It seems to me that in your journey from playing and coaching, you have been mentored by some great guys. You mentioned Coach Garber up at Sebethe, the coaching staff when you were at Washburn, and then to work with both coaches, Wilcox and Gartenmeyer Benedictine, these guys had to be a real influence on you and, you know, I would think a real help in getting you where you want to get.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't speak enough for what Coach Wilcox has done for me, what Coach Gartmeyer's done for me, those two guys and their experience, and just, you know, how they handle different situations and how they treat people and how they, you know, just operate. Just learned so much from those two guys. It's just been, I've been super blessed. You know, who else has worked for a Hall of Fame head coach, you know, a defensive coordinator. He's been the defensive coordinator for 40+ years. So to have that kind of experience just around you, just to watch and just see how they do things and, you know, really take notes and learn. It's been crazy. It's been awesome.
Let's take a little step back. You've been footballing for most of your life, certainly all of your adult life. If you were not coaching football, what would you be doing? What would have been your career path?
That's a million-dollar question. I don't know. That's you know, I have some other hobbies. I like golfing. So I think, like, you know, another career path could have been something down that line where I don't know. You know, it's something that, like, when I think about it right now, it's like,
I think about what would I do if I didn't, you know, if I wasn't a football coach. I don't really have an answer, to be honest, because this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. You know, maybe something in business, finance, something like that. That stuff does interest me. That's really where I'm at. Pretty locked into what I'm doing here.
Well, you mentioned your hobbies. You like to play golf. Any other things? I mean, are you a fisherman? Do you build model boats in a bottle? I mean, any other stuff that you like to do in your time?
I like to spend time with family, and we like to travel. So I love to travel to different places, just see the world and spend time with my family, seeing the world. I like to do things outside, like golfing, hiking. Not a big fisher or hunter. That stuff I did growing up. But yeah, just really, I really like traveling and just, you know, traveling with my family and just, you know, seeing the world and making memories. That's probably one of my main hobbies outside of football. I mean, you know, I like sports. I like, you know, pick up basketball. I love to golf. That's probably my number one hobby outside of my job and family. But yeah, just being outdoors and just experiencing different things.
Caleb Cook is with us, defensive coordinator at Benedictine. Were you on the staff during any of the Benedictine European football trips? Did you get to make any of those?
So 2017, they went to Austria, Germany, and I wasn't able to go. Me and my wife got married that summer, so we weren't able to make the trip. We planned on going to Paris, I believe it was 2019, and that trip got canceled because of COVID. So that was a huge bummer. We were really excited. Me and my wife were going to go, and my parents were going to go, but that got canceled. So unfortunately, I've never been on one of these legendary trips to Europe with Coach Wilcox and the team. But I was able to watch the game, and it was just sounds like an incredible thing for our guys.
Tell me about something that we don't know about you. Maybe a talent. Are you a musician? Do you sing? Do you have a skill or something that people would not see you and know you and make that connection?
I feel like I'm a pretty good singer. You can ask my wife. My son loves to listen to me sing, but I'm really not that good. And the one thing I am very good at is just like simple math in my head. For whatever reason, I'm pretty good at math, and I can do, you know, simple math in my head pretty quick. So that's something I've always been good at, and I actually enjoy it. That's kind of, you know, why, you know, maybe if I wasn't, you know, coaching football, I'd be, you know, doing something with numbers or finance or, you know, but that's something I am good at that probably most people don't know.
Let me ask you, we've talked about your high school coaches and stuff, who mentored you and who are really inspirational to you. As a kid, though, you were obviously sports-minded. Who were your, when you were growing up, who were your sports heroes? Who's the guys that you looked at and said, man, that guy's great?
Yeah, I was able to watch, you know, kind of when I was getting into really watching, when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, Michael Jordan was kind of at the end of his prime and playing. So I really, really followed him. He was a big one that I remember following. Barry Sanders. I always wanted to be a running back, so I was a big running back guy. Him being a Kansas guy, I always, you know, like Barry Sanders. I enjoyed watching, you know, Tiger Woods, you know, all the greats. I enjoyed watching Tiger Woods growing up. And those would probably be some of the main ones. But yeah, really every sport, I always had a favorite player that I was kind of drawn to for whatever reason.
Defensive coordinator now at Benedictine. Is it the job you thought it would be? Is it what you expected that you were getting yourself into? Harder, easier, different in any way?
I would say there's a lot of things that I didn't expect that are in ways harder. Just, you know, I always thought, like, you know, I could call the defense. I feel like I would do a great job. But like when you get in that spot, like sometimes the pressure that you feel and, you know, just the other things outside of just, you know, being the defensive coordinator on game days that you have to deal with, are some things that, you know, I'm still learning and still, you know, adjusting to. And, you know, so yeah, it's definitely, I love it. I enjoy it. I'm excited about where we're at defensively right now. But yeah, definitely some challenges that I, you know, when you're not that guy that I didn't foresee that I'm definitely learning and, you know, working through. There's no doubt.
I've talked to head coaches over the years, and they would tell me when you're way ahead in a game and things are going well, man, all of those assistant coaches, they're right there, and they're full of great ideas. But suddenly, when you're down to that last big player, that last final moment, and needing something to happen, you look up and down, and suddenly you realize, man, it's all you.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of like our players are out there playing. Like, my job is just to, and our job as a defensive staff is just to make a call that gives them a chance, put them in position to be successful. There's, you know, there's no perfect calls. Everyone has different philosophies on when to call certain things. So just put, you know, just calling a good call and giving them an opportunity to just execute the call. They're the ones that have to execute it, and, you know, calling things they're comfortable with in different situations is big. But at the end of the day, you know, defensive coordinators making calls is not winning the games. It's the players executing, and it's our job to get them to execute at a high level. And what they're executing at a high level is probably what we need to be calling most of the game in different situations. So
one thing I would think that for you as being a defensive coordinator and a coach on the club is getting yourself surrounded by those right guys. And so that translates into the recruiting aspect of the job. That's got to be one of the most difficult, maybe one of the most, I would think, fun parts of the job, bringing in the right guys into the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, recruiting, that's the difference between coaching high school and coaching college. We can recruit to our style of defense and like recruiting talent, but also recruiting the type of kids that we want to fit into our culture. So that's what's exciting, is when we bring in a recruiting class and like they're the type of kids that fit into our culture, both athletically, academically, just as a person. So that is a lot of fun to be able to just bring in the kids that you want to be around all the time. And, you know, there's always going to be, you know, a few kids that you have to reel in and get them to buy into the culture. But that's something that, to me as a coach, is most special, is developing their relationships, their recruiting, and then seeing those guys come in and really develop both as a person, as a player, and then see where they go from being an 18-year-old kid when I show up here to now they're 22, 23-year-old, fourth-year, fifth-year seniors, and just seeing how much they grow, and a big part because of, you know, the coaches and the program and the culture and the school. So that's very rewarding, there's no doubt.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you taking time to visit with us. We're so glad to have you here. Always good to see it. And I'm going to call you a local guy, certainly an area guy who's come into Benedictine and been very successful, and we're looking forward to a lot more great things from you and the program, and wish you all the very, very best of luck as we follow you through this 22 season.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
Welcome back to Sports Look here on Care Radio. Thanks so much to our interviewees, Joe Worthington and Caleb Cook and Gus. Now we've moved to the rapid fire, and if you're wearing red and gold, you've been waiting for this week since what, February?
Yeah, ever since the Chiefs lost that game to, well, Cincinnati, right? And it's here. We're finally to week one of the NFL season.
Yep, and the Kansas City Chiefs are going to start the season, even though the season begins tonight, actually, with what, Rams and Bills?
Yep, Bills and Rams.
But the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be in Arizona Sunday afternoon, 3:25 ball game. Kansas City is a 6-point favorite, 53.5 on the OU. But here's the thing, not an easy opponent. If you remember last year, what, Arizona started off like 7-0 or something?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to start off 7-0 this year.
No. And Arizona is going to be playing without DeAndre Hopkins, right? Their top receiver had a performance enhancement issue over the offseason, so he won't be playing. Kansas City, you got to love it. All 53 guys practiced this week, so nobody, you know, was a limited participant or anything. All are full participants going into week one, so that's a good feeling. Arizona basically is going to show you Kyler Murray, and they're going to show you Hollywood Brown. That's about it, right? Like, they've got J.J. Watt on the defensive side, but that would have worried you 8 years ago. You know, I mean, I like J.J. Watt as a player still and a person, but today he's not the same player he was when he was in Houston. I think that, you know, if you look at the over-under at 53, and I don't see that being a problem because I think Kansas City is going to score a lot of points and Patrick's going to show off a lot of weapons in week one because, honestly, I think just to kind of get everybody off the back of, oh, Kansas City's probably not as good as they have been.
They've got a point to prove. They got a little chip on their shoulder, maybe, and that's kind of unusual for a team that's been as successful as them to have a chip because people talk bad about them. But there's been some of that, and Kansas City has reloaded that receiver spot, and they're all saying Tyreek Hill at this point.
Yeah, and do you – I just don't understand it. And other than just looking for a new avenue and a new narrative – this year, I feel like everybody's betting against 15, and I'm like, that just sounds like a bad idea, right? You give a great athlete like 15 the, you know, the fuel and the motivation to go out and prove some people wrong. I just feel like that's probably not the side of the ball I want to be on. And so, you know, I expect him to go out and have a big game and also to go out and have a big season this year. Kansas City's going to be kind of fun. It's going to have a lot of new people. You talked about the receivers. I think you're going to see, you know, Pacheco in there a little bit at the running back. I'm excited to see what the defense looks like, right? Matthew's gone. I know that you're going to miss Dan Sorensen.
It's true.
But, you know, no Ben Neiman. Like, they revamped the entire defensive side of the ball. Karloftis could be fun to watch. So, again, I think this team will be a different look, but I think still same outcome.
And again, we talked Bills and Rams tonight, the 7:20 game to get the season started.
If you're a fan of Kansas City, you're pulling for the Rams tonight, right? Because every loss the Bills take is a good loss for Kansas City fans.
And it would not be impossible for the Bills to lose, even though a lot of people think they're the best team in football right now.
Yeah, everybody's, you know, head over heels about the Bills, but for me, do you remember about 2.5 years ago, Josh Allen, people were saying, oh, man, he might be a bust, right? Like, he just didn't look quite himself. And then Brian Daboll was able to kind of get him on the right track, and then last year he had a fantastic year. Daboll's gone, right? Your head coach is a defensive-minded coach. Your offensive coordinator has moved on to the Giants. This would be a new offensive scheme for Josh Allen. Do I think he's going to struggle? Not at all. But I don't think it's going to be quite the given that everybody has built it out to be so far.
How about Raiders Chargers? As the AFC West is going to put three teams in the postseason. Okay, I'm telling you that right now. Here, you know, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this game goes early. Raiders at Chargers Sunday afternoon at 3.
That was the game last year. Remember, we were watching on Sunday Night Football going, man, is this game going to end in a tie? What exactly is going to happen here? Like, it was one of those crazy games, but then when it came down to it, and the Chargers, again, when you're in, couldn't beat the Raiders. I'm just still not buying into Justin Herbert. He is a guy who, again, can't get his team into the playoffs. He is a sub-500 quarterback right now, but he puts up big numbers, and that's what everybody seems to like, and that's why they all say, you know, he's such a great quarterback.
So did Phillip Rivers.
Exactly. You know, I mean, Phillip Rivers was a perfect example. I mean, that is Chargers quarterback. Put up a lot of numbers, don't win the big game, or don't win games when you need them.
And rounding out the AFC West, Broncos are going to be at the Seahawks. Everybody says the Broncos are so much better. The Seahawks are terrible. Denver's a 6.5-point favorite right now.
Yeah, and all eyes will be on this game. Not only is it the first Monday night game of the year, but it's also going to be Russ Wilson going back to Seattle. It's going to be the Seahawks. I don't know that they've even announced who their starting quarterback is. I would guess probably Drew Locke going up against his old team. I wouldn't be shocked if the Seahawks somehow pull off the magic and beat Denver in week one.
That said, we're going to shift back to Major League Baseball because there's a couple of things to be interested in. Certainly, the Royals are going to be home this weekend with the Tigers. That should be an interesting series. And we're watching two numbers chases right now. We're watching Aaron Judge chasing the home run number, and we're watching Albert Pujols. Can he get to 700? I was talking to a huge St. Louis fan yesterday who says he doesn't even care if he gets to that. He wants to see him get to the number four spot and be behind Babe Ruth. He said that's a big enough achievement.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, and that's probably where a lot of people are. 25 games to go, so both guys are going to have to hit, what, like a home run every 5 days. Judge is going to have to be a little bit above that because, what, 61? So yeah. He's going to have to hit six in the next 25 games.
Pujols isn't playing a lot either. Yeah. Even though they put him at first base the other day to get him some time.
I don't think Pujols does it. And can I tell you, I don't know that Judge breaks it, but I think he gets it. Like, I think he ties Maris.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see.
It'll be interesting.
I mean, and I say that because he's been having a couple two-home-run games, you know, and that will go a long ways right now down the stretch. But with it all being said, let's be honest. Baseball season's over.
It's done.
Right? Like, tonight we'll kick off the NFL, and unless you are a fan of a team that's in the hunt right now, you don't care. Right? It won't even get top billing on any of your highlight shows that you watch, whether it's on Fox Sports or whether it's ESPN. I mean, it's all football right now, and, you know, the Shield seems to do a good job.
Talking about Major College Football coming up from last weekend, I'm going to tell you what. In my opinion, last weekend was some... I expected some great games, and there were maybe a couple, but there were some ugly, ugly, awful games, and it was not a real pretty opening week, was it?
So we got into the car up in Des Moines. We were listening to the Iowa pregame as we were going into the game, right? Everybody is excited for the season to start. We get in the car, and I'm telling you, those guys just in the postgame, they sounded dejected and down, and we looked at each other and said, there's no way Iowa lost the home opener. And then we found out they won 7-3. I'm like, oh, okay. And then we found out it was a touchdown, two safeties to a field goal, okay? A field goal, two safeties to a field goal. Nobody scored a touchdown in that first game of the year. So, yeah, I get it. There were some ugly games. Talking about that Florida State-LSU game, that was fun, but it never really should have been, right? You fumble at the one, they go 99 yards, get the PAT blocked. It was all said and done. I mean, it is what it is. And can I tell you, I heard a thing the other day that made me laugh. And it said, how do you know that football season is here? Cowboys fans says they're hopeful for a good year, right? We're going to make the playoffs, going to win the Super Bowl. Chargers have a big injury. They just did that yesterday. J.C. Jackson, their big offseason cornerback acquisition, not going to play the first week, maybe not even week two against Kansas City. And number three, Notre Dame loses to a top five team. Boom. Knocked the trifecta out in week one. So, yeah, when it's all said and done, Notre Dame played Ohio State, and they're going to look at, well, we played well, still lost. And so at the end of the day, Notre Dame's, you know, not that good. Ohio State looked okay. We're going to find out what Alabama does to Texas, because I think they just steamroll them on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, 20-point favorite for number one Alabama over Texas. Baylor. Pretty good team. They're going to be at BYU and ranking a couple of nationally ranked teams. That's going to be a Saturday night game, and you're going to have to get a nap because that's a late one.
That'll be a Big 12 preview, you know, here in a couple of years. BYU coming into the league, a 9-15 game. And that's what I think that, you know, like BYU wanting into the Big 12, because nobody watches that 9-15 game. Okay, I mean, I love football, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done by that point. You also saw the Big 12 commissioner came out yesterday and said that they're exploring teams in the Pacific time zone. I like that.
Kansas looks to go to 2-0, as they'll be at West Virginia. We'll see what Lance has got.
Yeah, you're going to learn something about his team, but I'm going to tell you, they're not going into Morgantown and coming away with a win. West Virginia, 13.5-point favorite.
I'm excited about Mizzou, K-State. It's the Big 8 coming back.
Mizzou at Kansas State. That's an 11 a.m. game on Saturday. Kansas State, a 7.5-point favorite in that ball game. Hey, one more thing, and then I'll let you get out of here.
Yeah.
Thought it was pretty cool that Steph Curry, right, goes back to Davidson, gets his classes figured out, and graduates.
Uh-huh.
And the biggest reason he wanted to graduate, Davidson wouldn't retire his jersey unless he was a Davidson graduate. I think that's a pretty cool deal. You talk about one of the best players in the NBA right now and one of the, you know, top however many players in NBA history, but yet a smaller school like Davidson wasn't going to retire his number until he graduated. You know, that's what you went to college for, to graduate, and so
I admire
hats off to Davidson for that, and hats off to Steph for going through the process of getting it done.
Yeah, he did not have to. I think he's going to be able to, you know, to get along okay without the degree.
Yeah.
But that's the right thing to do.
And you jumped over one thing real quick.
Oh, how did I skip?
Sunday Night Football.
Uh-oh.
Do you even care? Buccaneers at Cowboys?
Not really any. Although, doesn't mean I won't have it on the TV.
Yeah, I'll have it on, but you talk about two teams who could feasibly miss the playoffs.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though. I'll have to switch over during the ads during Big Brother.
Who's older, Jerry or Tom?
Oh, I think they graduated together.
Classmates at Arkansas, right?
Sports Look sponsors here on K Radio, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric Exchange Bank. Tomorrow night we're going to be in Winchester, ACCHS at Jeff North, 7 o'clock Saturday afternoon with a 1 o'clock kickoff, K Radio pregame at 12:30. Benedictine hosts Peru State. Till we greet you next time, for Gus Kautz, Tom Kautz, so long, everybody.